on him. The memories he was so desperate to regain, fusing with the trauma he had tried so hard to repress. Caught between the two, he cried out and clutched his head in his hands. For several seconds, he didn't move, his conscious will battling with his runaway subconscious. One by one, he was able to take the recollections, process them, and store them away, slowly regaining control. He knew with absolute certainty that he had been to this world before. He remembered its deserted city and its lifeless surface. He remembered searching the empty buildings with Malik, looking for archives, records, and astrogation charts that would guide them on the next step of the journey. But most of all, he remembered the horror of a dead planet entirely stripped of the Force. T3 was at his side, beeping with concern. Revan blinked away the last of his fugue state and glanced down at the Hawk's sensors to see what had the little droid so upset. The sensors had picked up another vessel in the system. It was difficult to draw on the Force so close to the ravaged world, and he struggled to get some sense of the passengers on the other ship. By the time his groggy mind registered the threat they posed, it was too late. The ion blast hit the Hawk full bore, shorting out its circuits and engines and leaving them at the mercy of the gravitational field from the planet below. Revan scrambled to steer the ship as it was pulled down into Nathema's atmosphere, wondering at the chances of surviving a second crash landing in a row. The ion blast had damaged the flight controls and stabilizers, and the ship veered wildly as it plummeted toward the surface. He had no idea if the other vessel was following him. His sensors had been knocked out along with everything else. But he knew if he didn't get the engines and repulsors back online, the Ebon Hawk would be smashed to pieces by the fall. T3! He shouted. But the astromech had already sprung into action. T3 had connected himself to the cockpit's main control panel with a 20-centimeter-long slicing tool. Lights on the cockpit dashboard began to flicker and flash as T3 rerouted power from damaged circuits. Through the cockpit window, Revan could see the distant outline of a city far below, the skyscraper seeming to grow rapidly as the Hawk rushed toward them at terminal velocity. Inside the control panel, something crackled and popped. Smoke poured into the cockpit. T3 squealed in alarm, but his warning was drowned out by the sound of the Hawk's engines roaring back to life. Revan pulled back hard on the stick, and the nose of the Hawk grudgingly angled upward, emergency repulsors screaming. "Brace for impact!" he shouted, an instant before they slammed into the edge of one of the massive skyscrapers, sending a shower of permacrete and plasteel tumbling to the empty street below. The Hawk ricocheted off the building and began to spin wildly. Then it slammed into the ground at an awkward angle, skipping along the street like a stone cast across water, before finally coming to rest. Chapter 16. Scourge had no desire to return to Nathema, but he didn't raise any objection when Nyriss redirected their shuttle back toward the planet's surface in pursuit of the damaged freighter. They had to find out who was on that vessel, why they were here, and if they were still alive. It had crashed down in one of a handful of cities that dotted the world, leaving a path of damaged buildings and mangled speeders in its wake. The ship itself still seemed to be relatively intact. It lay wedged against the base of a skyscraper at the end of a main thoroughfare. Nyriss brought the shuttle in cautiously, wary of return fire as she scanned the enemy vessel.
"Anybody alive in there?"
Scourge asked. Anywhere else in the galaxy, he would have been able to sense the survivors through the Force. Here on Nathema, however, the aftermath of the Emperor's grim ritual blinded his abilities.
"I'm picking up readings of an organic life form on board,"
Nyriss confirmed. They brought the shuttle in for a landing roughly 50 meters from the other vessel. There had been no reaction of any kind from the enemy craft as they approached.
"Search the interior," Nyriss ordered. "I'll wait here."
Disembarking, Scourge got his first good look at the ship. It was an unusual shape, flat and circular, like a disc. He approached it cautiously, his heart pounding. Normally, he relied on the Force to warn him of potential danger. Without it, he felt vulnerable and almost helpless. It was a feeling he most definitely did not like. He was halfway to the vessel when another thought struck him. What if Nyriss simply decided to take off in her shuttle and leave him here? The thought froze him for a moment, until he realized how ridiculous the idea was. If Nyriss had wanted to get rid of him, she could have done so a dozen different ways already. There was no reason to abandon him on Nathema, not after risking her own life to bring him here in the first place. Scourge steeled himself and continued his advance until he reached the strange ship's underbelly. He pushed the access panel on the hull, and the boarding ramp slowly descended. He wasn't surprised to find it unlocked. Most ships had emergency overrides on their security systems in case of a crash, in order to allow rescue workers to get inside and help the injured. Scourge activated his lightsaber. The familiar hum and hiss of the blade springing to life sounded weak and distant, and the crimson blade appeared faded. Even his weapon was not immune to the effects of the dead planet, but he suspected it would still get the job done if he encountered any resistance. He climbed up the boarding ramp and into the hull of the ship. He followed the circular layout, briefly glancing into storage rooms and passenger bunks in his search for whoever might be on board. He found nothing until he reached the cockpit. Strapped into the chair was an unconscious, or dead, human male, clad in simple brown robes. He appeared to be about 40 standard years old. He was thin and wiry, with dark shoulder-length hair and rough black stubble on his cheeks and chin. Blood poured from a deep gash on his forehead and covered his face. During the crash, something that wasn't strapped down must have struck him. Coming closer, Scourge put two fingers on the side of the man's neck, checking for a pulse. He had barely registered the faint flutter of life when his gaze fell on the hilt hooked to the man's belt. A lightsaber. Instinctively, he tried to reach out with the Force to get some sense of the man's power, but he felt only the emptiness of Nathema. Grabbing the lightsaber and clipping it onto his own belt, he unbuckled the man, slung him over his shoulder, and carried him off the vessel. The weight of the unconscious man made it difficult to move any faster than a brisk walk, but Scourge pressed the pace. He was eager to leave Nathema behind him for good this time. Nyriss was waiting for him back at the shuttle, standing just inside the boarding ramp. Scourge strode past her and onto the ship, where he tossed the unconscious man roughly onto the floor. He was about to mention the lightsaber, but Nyriss spoke before he had a chance.
"I know this man," she said, her voice grim. "His name is Revan. He's a Jedi, and a Republic spy."
"A Republic spy?" Scourge's brain took the news and jumped to the next logical conclusion. "If the Jedi know we exist, they will come for us. They will try to finish the extermination of our species that they began in the Great Hyperspace War."
"Our existence is still hidden," she assured him. "Revan and another Jedi, a man named Malik, discovered Dromund Kos by accident. They were captured before they could return and report their findings to the Republic."
"When did all this happen?"
5 years ago. The Emperor sentenced Revan to death."
"Then what's he doing here?"
"I don't know," Nyriss admitted. "But he couldn't have escaped the Citadel's dungeons unless the Emperor allowed it. It stands to reason that he wouldn't still be alive unless he was working for the Emperor."
"How is that possible?" Scourge countered. "The Jedi are our sworn enemies."
Nyriss didn't answer.
"Watch him closely," she said, returning to the pilot seat. "He is powerful and extremely dangerous."
"Why don't we just kill him?"
"Not yet," Not until we know why he is here. We'll take him back to my stronghold for questioning.
I've never interrogated a Jedi, Scourge said after a moment. He smiled. I'm looking forward to it.
Revan had no idea where he was when he awoke, though it was obviously some kind of prison cell. He was propped up in a cold metal chair. His hands were bound to the arms, his ankles tied to the legs. For the moment, he was alone. His mind felt slow and dull, and he knew he'd been drugged. It was difficult to concentrate, impossible to focus his thoughts enough to use the Force. It took all his willpower just to recall the last moments of the Ebon Hawk crashing on Nathema. He struggled to take stock of his situation, but he couldn't pierce the haze of the drugs. The door to his cell slid open, and two figures entered, one male and one female. The sight of their red skin tweaked something in his addled brain, but it took several seconds before he could make the connection.
Sith,
he whispered, his throat dry and his voice hoarse.
Welcome back, Revan,
the female said in Basic. He stared at her withered, wrinkled face, trying and failing to dredge up her name.
Do I know you?
The tall male Sith beside her reached out with a hand and casually delivered a backhanded slap across Revan's cheek.
We don't have time to play games, he said.
His voice wasn't angry or threatening. It was calm and completely matter-of-fact. Revan tasted blood. The smack had cut the inside of his mouth. He could feel the sting of the wound and the swelling of his lip. Apparently, the drugs used to dull his mind had been carefully selected so they would not interfere with the sensation of physical pain.
I don't think this is a game, the female said, raising an eyebrow. I think he's actually forgotten me.
She leaned in close beside him and whispered in his ear.
What happened to you, Revan?
Where did you go?
Why did you return?
When he didn't answer, she stepped back and nodded. Then she waved a hand, and an interrogator droid, Revan hadn't even noticed it hovering behind the two Sith, floated over and extended a long, thin needle into his neck. He grimaced in pain as the needle punctured his skin, then screamed as it discharged a powerful electrical burst, setting his nerves on fire. The Sith male waved a hand, and the interrogator droid retreated.
What happened to your partner?
He asked.
Malak.
I killed him,
Revan said.
Why? It's complicated.
The male's expression didn't change, but the female smiled in amusement, the expression transforming her wrinkled features into those of a grinning skull.
Eventually, you'll tell us everything we want to know,
the male assured him.
Maybe so,
Revan conceded.
But I'm going to make you work for it.
After 4 hours of questioning the prisoner, Nyriss ordered Scourge to take a break. They left him in his cell, tied to his chair, neither of them speaking until they were outside in the hall and the door to his cell had closed behind them.
How much longer will it take to break him? Nyriss asked.
Scourge considered the question carefully before answering. Early in his training, he had shown a knack for torture and interrogation, skills the instructors had encouraged during his years at the academy. He was an expert in the field. He knew that wringing information out of an unwilling source was about far more than just inflicting pain. Apply enough punishment, and everyone would talk. But most of what they said would be desperately babbled lies, evasions, and half-truths. Without any way to verify accuracy, Information gathered through torture was often unreliable and even worthless. Effective interrogation was an art, and Scourge had an innate ability to parse fact from fiction. He knew what questions to ask and in what order. He understood when to ratchet up the intensity and when to pull back. He knew how to use the threat of pain and the reward of mercy to control his subjects. His advanced techniques, combined with his ability to draw upon the dark side, allowed him to quickly dominate weak minds. Strong-willed subjects were more of a challenge, yet in the end, he always got results. Until now. Interrogating the Jedi had resulted in nothing but frustration and dead ends. His will was strong, as was his command of the Force. Even drugged to the edge of unconsciousness, he was able to draw on it, to help him endure the pain and the relentless barrage of questions. But there was something else as well. Nyriss wanted to know how he had escaped the dungeons of the Citadel. She wanted to know about his relationship with the Emperor. She wanted to know why he had come to Nathema. On all those counts, Scourge had come up empty. Revan was resisting him, true, but at some times it almost seemed as if Revan himself didn't know, as if the information had been wiped from his mind.
"We might be wasting our time," he finally admitted. "His pain threshold is high, but we're already at the limits of what a human can endure. If I press any harder, we risk killing him."
Scourge had seen it happen many times. Unskilled or overeager interrogators could easily push their subjects too far. In his mind, this was the ultimate failure. You couldn't get answers from a corpse. With difficult subjects, you had to be patient. It might take multiple sessions over several days to get anything useful. But even knowing this, Scourge didn't hold out much hope for his chances with Revan.
"I could question him for months, but the information you want just isn't there."
"That is unfortunate," Nyriss sighed. "I was hoping to verify my theory."
"What theory?"
"The Emperor has the ability to dominate and enslave the minds of those who serve him," she explained. "It's one of the reasons he has ruled for so long. Those that are transformed become fanatical zealots who live to serve. They are not capable of betraying him."
She glanced back at the door behind which they had left the Jedi.
"I suspect that instead of executing Revan, as he publicly proclaimed, the Emperor turned him into a puppet of his will and sent him back to the Republic to gather information."
"If he's been gathering intel on the Republic for 5 years, the Emperor must be closer to launching his invasion than we thought,"
Scourge noted, alarmed at how close their mad ruler had already come to exposing them to the Jedi. Nyriss shook her head.
"The Emperor is more patient and careful than any being in the galaxy. He has lived for nearly 1,000 years. He might live for 10,000 more. He leaves nothing to chance. If necessary, he will spend decades, maybe even centuries, preparing. No. We still have time. And Revan may still be of use to us."
"How so?"
"You said it yourself. Something happened to his mind. His memories are lost, but so is his knowledge of and loyalty to the Emperor. Whatever was done to him, it freed him from the Emperor's domination. If we can learn how this happened, we might be able to use it to bring the Emperor down. Remember that all those who have direct access to the Emperor, the Emperor's voice, the Emperor's hand, the soldiers in the Imperial Guard, are under his spell. Breaking that spell, turning his most loyal followers against him, is our best chance of defeating him and saving the Empire from his mad plan to attack the Republic. We need Revan alive so we can study him," she concluded. "He is too valuable a resource to throw away."
What she said made sense, but Scourge knew it would be far more difficult and complicated than she made it sound.
"It might take years before you understand what happened to him," he warned her.
"The Emperor is not the only one who can be patient," she replied.
Part 2, Chapter 17.
Bastila tucked her son into bed and leaned down to kiss him on the cheek. At the door of his room, she turned and looked back at him, marveling at how much the 3-year-old boy already looked like his father. He had the same dark, shoulder-length hair and the thin, angular face. His eyes were closed now, but she knew they were dark and brooding, just like Revan's. And though he was already drifting off to sleep, his expression was still unusually serious and intense for a child his age. She sighed and turned away. Bastila often worried about the effect her son's turbulent childhood would have on him. Growing up without a father was difficult enough, but the first few years of his life had been scarred by war and terror. After Malak had been defeated, Bastila, like most other citizens of the Republic, had hoped to enjoy many decades of peace. Instead, a group of rogue Jedi had broken away from the Order, plunging the galaxy once more into civil war. Led by a woman named Kreia, the rogue Jedi turned to the dark side teachings uncovered by Malak and Revan. Kreia took the name Darth Treya, and her followers called themselves the Sith after the long-lost species that had invaded the Republic a millennium before. They began a systemic purge of the galaxy, hunting down those who still held fast to the Jedi code, killing them by the tens of thousands. Their relentless pursuit virtually wiped out the Order, and only those few who managed to flee or hide survived. Had Revan returned to face this new threat, Bastila would have eagerly fought by his side. Together they might have been able to quell the uprising, ending it before the horrors of war enveloped the Republic, and millions lost their lives. But she had heard nothing of her husband since he had set off with Candorus 4 years earlier. Alone, she dared not challenge Darth Treya and her followers. Instead, she had focused on keeping her son alive. It had been the exile, Mitra Surik, who had taken up the fight against the rogue Jedi. 3 years after Revan's unsuccessful attempt to locate her, she had emerged on her own to oppose and eventually defeat Darth Treya. Like Revan before her, she became the savior of the galaxy. And also, as with Revan, there were many who felt her recent actions could not atone for the sins of her past. And now this woman, hero to some, villain to so many others, was sitting in the living room of Bastila's apartment, patiently waiting for her to finish putting her son to bed.
"He's asleep," Bastila said as she returned, speaking softly. "He's beautiful," Mitra answered, adding, "He looks like his father."
Bastila nodded at the compliment. She wasn't sure what to make of the woman before her. Mitra had short brown hair, pale white skin, and piercing blue eyes. She was taller than Bastila, and almost a decade older, though she would still be considered beautiful by any empirical measure. She possessed a presence and confidence, along with an enviable natural grace. She was clad in the simple robes of a Jedi master, but somehow she managed to make even the drab brown cloth seem stylish. Foolish as it was, Bastila couldn't help but feel some hint of jealousy. Mitra had known Revan long before Bastila. She had answered his call to go to war against the Mandalorians, and in doing so, she became one of his most trusted advisors and closest friends. Bastila knew they had shared a special bond, not unlike that of Padawan and Master. Worst of all, Mitra was an integral part of Revan's lost past, a past he had felt compelled to go in search of, even though it meant leaving his pregnant wife behind.
"There is no emotion. There is peace," she thought. The familiar words of the Jedi mantra were easy to recite, but much more difficult to follow.
"You said we needed to speak?"
Bastila said.
"I wasn't sure if we should come,"
Mitra admitted.
"I understand this might be difficult for you, but T3 insisted."
She reached out and patted the little astromech accompanying her on the head. The last time Bastila had seen T3-M4, he had been boarding the Ebon Hawk with Revan and Candorous. Her husband was still missing, but the droid had returned. Clearly he had latched on to Mitra, following at her heel as he had once followed Revan. One more small detail to feed Bastila's irrational jealousy.
"As much as I tried, I couldn't get him to tell me anything," Mitra added.
Bastila smiled faintly.
"I gave him special instructions the night before he left with Revan. I told T3 that if they ever became separated, he had to come find me. I programmed him so he wouldn't tell anyone else what had happened until I heard it first."
Mitra nodded.
"A wise move. We've both experienced enough betrayal to understand you never know whom to trust." "I never imagined I'd be in hiding when he returned,"
Bastila continued.
"I'm sorry about that, T3. If I'd known you were back, I would have tried to contact you."
The droid beeped in acceptance of her apology.
"Fortunately, he found me,"
Mitra said.
"I guess he thought I was the next best thing, given my history with Revan."
Bastila bit her lip to keep from saying anything. She knew her feelings of resentment were neither justified nor fair, but even her Jedi training couldn't quell her emotions.
"Or maybe he just knew I'd need his help,"
Mitra added quickly, perhaps aware she had in some way offended her host.
"The little guy does have a knack for joining up with galactic saviors,"
Bastila remarked, trying to keep her voice neutral. The droid beeped again in agitation.
"I'm sorry,"
Bastila said again.
"You're right. You've been very patient so far. I'm just not sure I'm ready to hear what you have to tell me."
She often wondered if Revan was still alive. She'd always imagined their love would let her sense him through the Force, even across the breadth of an entire galaxy. Once he left, she learned that wasn't true. Some nights she would dream of him, but she was never sure if these were true visions or merely manifestations of the loneliness she'd felt since he'd gone. Still, she believed she would have sensed a disturbance in the Force if he had died. Clinging to that gave her hope. Now, however, her belief might be exposed as a mere illusion if T3 told her that Revan was dead. She wanted to hear the truth, of course, but she was determined to hang on to the fantasy for just a few seconds longer.
"Take your time," Mitra said. "I know this is difficult. T3's waited 3 years for this. He can wait a little while longer."
Her words were meant as comfort, but they had the opposite effect.
"Maybe this would be easier if T3 and I spoke in private,"
Bastila said. It was clear the request had caught Mitra off guard, but she quickly regained her composure.
"I understand you want to be cautious," she said sympathetically. "But Candorous told me all about Revan and his search for the storm-covered world."
Bastila grimaced. She'd heard rumors that a Mandalorian had aided the Exile in her battle against Darth Treya.
"Is it true?"
Bastila asked.
"Is Candorous the new Mandalore?"
Mitra nodded.
"Revan helped him find Mandalore's mask before continuing on alone." "What else do you know that I don't?"
Bastila asked, trying to keep the bitterness out of her voice.
"I would never intentionally keep any knowledge of Revan from you,"
Mitra assured her earnestly.
"You're his wife. You have more right to the truth than anyone."
Bastila swallowed hard, suddenly ashamed.
"You have the same right,"
she said.
"You stood by Revan's side at the beginning. He had no truer friend. Whatever T3 has to say, we should hear it together.
Mitra nodded her appreciation, but didn't speak.
Taking a deep breath, Bastila sat down on the living room chair, facing her guests.
She folded her hands in her lap, mentally bracing herself for what was to come.
I'm ready,
she said. In a series of beeps, chimes, and hollow recordings, T3 relayed his story. He began with Revan returning to the Ebon Hawk on Rekiat. He told them how he and Revan had left Candorus behind and journeyed to Nathema alone. He described the unexpected attack on the Ebon Hawk and the near-fatal crash landing on Nathema's surface. He explained how he had checked on the unconscious Revan to make sure he was still alive, then been forced to hide when someone else boarded the ship. When he played the holo recording he'd made of the red-skinned man who had taken Revan off the ship, Bastila gasped.
I guess the Sith aren't as extinct as the Jedi thought, Mitra said. The Order is wrong again, Bastila muttered. Big surprise.
T3 let out a low whistle, apologizing for his cowardice, but Bastila shook her head.
That wasn't cowardice, she told the little droid. If you hadn't hit, they'd have captured you too, or turned you into scrap. The only way you could help Revan was by making it back in one piece, Mitra added.
Mollified, T3 continued his story. He told them how Revan was taken onto a waiting shuttle and whisked away. With his master gone, returning to Bastila had become the astromech's primary purpose, as per her last-minute instructions before they'd left Coruscant. The first step involved getting the Ebon Hawk airborne again. The droid described in detail his arduous efforts to repair the damage done by the crash. For months, he scoured the streets of the deserted city, gathering scrap, salvage, and other necessary parts.
And you never saw anyone during that time?
Mitra asked.
No refugees? No looters?
T3 chirped out a confirmation. Bastila blinked in surprise.
No animals? No insects? Not even plants? How could the entire population of an entire world just be wiped out?
Mitra shifted uncomfortably in her seat, and Bastila knew she was thinking back to her role in the massacre of Malachor V. She felt a sudden burst of empathy for the other woman. Bastila didn't condone what she had done, but she understood what it was like to be ashamed of acts in your past. She herself had let Malak turn her to the dark side. Only the power of Revan's love had redeemed her. Bastila sensed that despite all Mitra had done to stop Darth Treya, she was haunted by guilt and remorse. She was still looking for redemption. Unaware of the awkward tension in the room, the droid continued his tale. After nearly a year, he was finally able to get the Ebon Hawk airborne again, though its hyperdrive core was only operating at minimal efficiency. The Hawk limped back to Republic space. By the time it arrived, Treya and her followers had all but wiped out the Jedi. Bastila was gone. T3 didn't know where to search for her, or whether she was even alive. It was during this time that the little astromech droid stumbled across the disassembled pieces of HK-47, abandoned on a remote and nameless world. Recognizing his old companion, the little droid gathered up the pieces and stored them on the Ebon Hawk. The chance encounter was the kind of coincidence that Bastila would have chalked up to the influence of the Force, had T3 been an organic being.
Do you have any idea how he got there? She asked. I always wondered what happened to him after he disappeared.
Mitra shook her head, answering on behalf of the droid.
His memory core was damaged. Even after I repaired him, he was unable to recall anything. Actually, she admitted, I'd hoped you might be able to tell me what had happened to him.
Bastila shrugged.
When he found out Revan had left, HK decided to go after him. But I refused to tell him where my husband had gone. A wise move,
Mitra said.
The last thing Revan needed while helping Candorus and the Mandalorians was a homicidal droid following him around.
HK stormed off, swearing he would track Revan down on his own,
Bastila continued.
That was the last I heard of him until he showed up again with you.
There must be some part of his programming that compels him to seek Revan out,
Mitra muttered.
If I had known that, I would have been more careful.
What do you mean?
I left HK under the supervision of the new Jedi Council. I didn't think it was safe to have him roaming the galaxy, and I assumed he would be content to stay with the Jedi, awaiting further orders. But he disappeared soon after I left. Now I realize he's probably gone in search of Revan again.
Suddenly worried, Bastila asked,
Is there any chance he'll find him?
She directed her question to T3.
Did you tell him anything about what happened to Revan?
T3 responded with a negative buzz that sounded almost offended. Clearly, the astromech felt the same reservations about involving the hunter-killer droid as his human counterparts.
Relieved, Bastila muttered. Someone should try to track him down, find and disable him before he hurts anyone else.
There was little conviction behind her words. As dangerous as HK was, he was only one droid. She had more important things on her mind. Her husband was still missing, and for the first time in years, she was on the verge of being able to do something about it.
The Jedi are already searching for HK,
Mitra assured her.
Don't worry about him.
Bastila nodded.
T3,
she said.
Tell us the rest of your story. What happened next?
The astromech continued his tale. After finding the disassembled bits of HK-47, he fell in with Mitra, joining her as he had joined Revan many years before. By the time he learned Bastila was alive, he was once again caught up in a battle for the Republic's survival. Despite his instructions, he knew he couldn't abandon Mitra until the safety of the Republic was secured. His confession caused Bastila to feel another surge of bitterness. T3 had chosen to help Mitra instead of following Bastila's instructions. He'd put the exile's mission above his loyalty to Revan. The emotion passed quickly, replaced by guilt and shame. Bastila's love for Revan had once again momentarily blinded her to logic and reason. Her husband was one man. It was foolish to value his life against the fate of millions. If Revan had been standing in the room, he would have congratulated the droid for putting the greater good above personal wants and desires.
Revan would be proud of you,
she told the little droid.
I'm proud of you, too.
I think our path is clear,
Mitra declared.
I will go to Nathema and see if I can learn Revan's fate.
You?
Bastila said, her voice showing more anger and surprise than she intended.
What about me? You expect me to just sit here and wait, not even knowing if he's alive or dead?
What has changed since Revan left?
Mitra asked softly.
You stayed behind to care for your son. Are you prepared to leave him behind now?
Of course not!
Bastila spat. She almost added,
I'll bring him with me.
But at the last second,
she realized how reckless and ridiculous that would be.
Revan had left because he believed there was something in the unknown regions that was a far greater threat than any the Republic had ever faced. Guided by his visions of a storm-covered world, he thought his journey was the only way to protect the future of his family.
Following in his footsteps might expose their son to the very threat Revan was trying to stop. It would be a betrayal of the very principles that had sent him on his journey in the first place. And it would endanger their child.
I'm sorry,
Bastila whispered.
I didn't mean to. I miss him. I feel so helpless, so useless. All I do is wait. You don't understand how hard it's been.
I can only imagine how you've suffered,
Mitra replied gently.
I wish I could say it will get easier, but
but I fear that may not be the case. We all have burdens to bear, and this is yours."
Her words offered little comfort, but Bastila appreciated her honesty.
"I will do everything in my power to find Revan,"
Mitra promised.
"If he is still alive, I will do whatever it takes to bring him back to you."
T3 beeped twice.
"I would be honored if you came," Mitra told him. "As long as Bastila doesn't object."
Bastila wanted T3 to stay with her. His holo recordings and data banks were all she had left of her husband. But she was thinking rationally now.
"You're going to need his help,"
she said.
"He spent months exploring Nephima while searching for parts to repair the Hawk." "Then we must leave as soon as possible,"
Mitra declared, rising to her feet.
"Please, wait just a moment longer,"
Bastila said. Leaving Mitra and T3 in the living room, she rushed into the bedchamber and opened the wooden chest tucked away in the back of her closet. She grabbed two items, then returned to her waiting guests.
"Give these to Revan,"
she said, placing the items in Mitra's hands. The first was a holo recording she had made of their son's last birthday celebration. The second was a heavy object wrapped in a swathe of black cloth. Mitra glanced at her, silently asking permission to unwrap it. Bastila answered with a subtle nod. Mitra unwound the cloth carefully, revealing a worn and scarred metal helmet with a red and gray faceplate.
"Revan's mask!" Mitra gasped. "I thought it was lost when he was captured by the Jedi strike team." "I led that strike team,"
Bastila reminded her.
"I don't know why, but I took it when Revan fell. Perhaps even then I sensed our fates were intertwined, but I never told anyone. Not the Council, not even him."
"Why not?"
Bastila hesitated, then decided Mitra deserved to know the truth.
"Revan wore the mask during the Mandalorian Wars, and during his time as Darth Revan. To me, it symbolizes his dark past, a relic from a time before he became the man I loved. I was afraid that if I showed it to him, it might trigger something inside his mind. It might awaken some dormant evil, rekindle the spark of the dark side. Then why give it to me now? I tried to keep Revan's past at bay, but now I understand that was wrong. I was being selfish. His past is a part of him, whether I like it or not."
She looked away from the mask.
"When you find him, give him the mask. It might mean nothing to him now, but there's a chance it will bring back some of what he has lost. Seeing it might restore crucial memories that will help you return safely."
"What if your fears are right?"
Mitra asked, her voice grim.
"The mask could bring back his memories, but what if it does more? What if it unleashes the power of the dark side in him?"
"I don't care,"
Bastila said defiantly.
"Not if that power helps bring him back to me."
As a Jedi, her words were blasphemy. She half expected Mitra to throw the mask to the ground in disgust. Instead, the other woman rewrapped it in the cloth and tucked it safely away beneath her robes without saying a word. Chapter 18. Mitra didn't know what to expect as the Ebon Hawk dropped out of hyperspace and began the approach toward Nathema. T3M4 had told her that the planet was deserted, but the little droid had found no apparent cause of the mass extinction. While exploring the surface on his last visit, he'd run tests that confirmed the environment was free of toxins and radiation. Beyond that, everything else was speculation. As the ship drew closer to the dingy, browned world, she felt a growing sense of unease and discomfort. In some ways, it reminded her of Malachor V. The massive and instantaneous loss of life on that doomed world had created a wound in the Force. The activation of the mass shadow generator had obliterated two armies, shredding apart the bonds of the Force that linked all living things. Mitra had been close enough to feel the shockwave. To survive it, she had cut herself off from the Force, shielding her psyche against the horrors of what she had unleashed. Many years had passed before she regained her connection to the Force. But in the end, surviving the trauma of Malachor V had given her the strength to defeat Darth Treya and her followers. At first, she assumed some similar tragedy had occurred on Nathema. A superweapon capable of snuffing out an entire planet would leave a blanketing echo of death and darkness. As the Ebon Hawk descended through the atmosphere, however, she realized this sensation was markedly different. It took her a few seconds to put her finger on it, her mind analyzing the problem, even as her hands automatically made the necessary adjustments to bring the ship in for a landing near the coordinates T3 had given her. The events on Malachor had left a mark on the Force, a wound that would not heal. Here, however, the Force was simply gone. It was as if someone had ripped it away, leaving only an empty void behind. Her discomfort grew as the ship drew closer to the surface. This world was unnatural, and her body's instinctive reaction was one of illness and revulsion. She glanced over at T3, hovering anxiously near her in the cockpit, but the droid seemed unaffected. His lack of reaction merely reinforced the nature of her own suffering. As a droid, T3 could not sense the Force, and he wouldn't notice if it was suddenly missing. Through the cockpit window, Mitra saw a path of destruction winding its way through the city below. The remnants of Revan's crash landing. A massive chunk of permacrete had been smashed loose from a skyscraper passing by on the ship's starboard side. The pavement of the street and sidewalk below had been torn up when the vessel had skipped and skidded down the thoroughfare. The mangled remnants of hover cars and speeders traced an irregular line down the street, the smaller vehicles crushed by the passage of the far more massive starship. Mitra selected her landing spot and set the ship down carefully. The oppressiveness of the void was bearing down on her, but she did her best to ignore it.
"Come on, T3,
she said, unbuckling herself from the pilot's chair.
"Let's take a look around and see what we can find."
As she stepped off the shuttle, she felt like she had been punched in the gut. She doubled over, and T3 beeped in concern.
"I'm okay,"
she gasped, slowly straightening up. She had visited Malachor V years after the cataclysm of the mass shadow generator. Traversing its surface had been agony. Mentally, she had still sensed the anguish of all who had lost their lives there. Physically, the intense gravity of the world had held her in its crushing grip, leaving her gasping for breath. It had been the most awful and horrific experience of her life. Until now. On Malachor, she'd felt the echoes of unimaginable pain and suffering, but at least she felt something. Here on Nathema, there was only a cold emptiness. It was unnatural, abhorrent. On Malachor, she had felt the echo of great destruction. Here, there was only the unbearable void of annihilation. Her body reacted with a revulsion so strong, she felt physically ill. Her mind briefly tried to imagine what had happened to cause such an abomination, then recoiled from the answers. Her mind went blank and her body numb. She stood motionless for several minutes, or maybe it was several hours. Time had no meaning here. But the incessant squawking of T3 eventually roused her from her stupor. Drawing on the mental focusing techniques she had learned as a Padawan, she forced herself to concentrate on something, anything besides the inescapable non-presence of the Force.
"You've come here to find Revan,"
she thought.
There has to be some clue as to where the Sith might have taken him. We need to find some kind of archive,
she said out loud.
Something that can tell us more about this world.
Her voice sounded hollow and washed out, but it was just one more unsettling detail of Nathema that she refused to dwell on. The lights on T3 blinked rapidly as the astromech quickly scanned his memory circuits. A few seconds later, he beeped excitedly and took off down the street. Mitra followed him, her long legs allowing her to quickly catch up to and keep pace with the droid. The brisk walk made her feel more normal. Physical activity seemed to help keep Nathema's oppressive emptiness at bay. The droid led her to the entrance of what appeared to be some kind of official government building. On the outside were characters she couldn't read. In the Republic, all government businesses were conducted in BASIC, and while it was likely the inhabitants of Nathema had been familiar with BASIC, the lingua franca of interstellar trade was known to virtually every spacefaring species in the galaxy, they had obviously marked their building in a native tongue. The building was 3 stories high, with only a handful of windows looking out to the street, and a pair of uninviting doors that seemed to be the common fashion of bureaucratic strongholds across every culture of the galaxy. The doors were locked, but she carved through the security bolt with her lightsaber, trying to ignore the dim and washed-out appearance of the glowing blade.
Focus on the task at hand, she reminded herself. Just find the information you're looking for as quickly as possible, and you can get off this blasted world.
She stepped through, T3 following at her heel. It was dark inside. Whatever source had once powered the building had long since fallen into disrepair. Mitra pulled a glow rod from one of the many pockets sewn into the wide fabric belt on her waist and ignited it, illuminating their surroundings with its eerie green glow. The first thing she noticed were the piles of clothes scattered haphazardly about. She realized they must have fallen to the ground when the wearers vanished. It took all her mental discipline to keep her mind from speculating on what kind of event could have caused the bizarre phenomenon. Exploring the ground floor revealed it to be some type of reception area or lobby. There was a large desk set up to face the door, perfectly positioned for the person behind it to greet visitors. Apart from several uncomfortable-looking chairs arranged in what was probably a central waiting room, there didn't seem to be much else of interest on the lower level. There was a lift in the corner leading to the upper floors, but with no power, it was of little use. Fortunately, a quick search located a staircase behind an unmarked door near the back of the building.
Let's check out the upper floors, she said,
and T3 beeped in agreement. For some astromech droids, stairs could be a problem. But T3 was remarkably versatile. By locking his wheels to keep from rolling backward, he was able to use his front legs to lever himself up the steps one at a time. It took him a little longer to reach the top of the flight than his human companion, but at least Mitra didn't have to try to carry him. The second floor was filled with data terminals and cubicles, workstations for the government drones who had once wandered the offices and halls. Unfortunately, without power, the computer network had ceased to function, rendering the terminals useless.
Let's see if we can find the main data bank on the next floor up, Mitra suggested.
A few minutes later, they were on the third floor. Like the level below, it seemed to consist primarily of offices, cubicles, and workstations.
Near the back of the building, they found a single Durasteel door. On the wall beside it was what appeared to be a security pad. Show me what you've got, Mitra said, pointing to the pad.
T3 rolled up to the wall.
A panel on his body slid open to reveal a long, thin electrical probe, which he extended so that it pierced the security pad.
There was a brief pause, then the unmistakable zap of a powerful electrical discharge. The keypad lit up, and the door slid open. As Mitra had hoped, the room beyond housed the primary computer databanks.
Grab anything that looks useful so we can get out of here, she said.
T3 hustled to oblige, inserting his versatile probe into an interface port so he could slice into the defunct network. As he had done with the door panel, T3 gave the databank a powerful electrical jolt to temporarily reactivate it so he could download the relevant files. The entire process took less than 5 minutes, but for Mitra, it might as well have been an eternity. She had managed to keep busy up until this point, but while waiting idly by for T3 to finish, she began to notice the absence of the Force once more. She could feel the void pressing in on her from all sides. At the same time, it was pulling on her, trying to rip away the very essence of her existence. Nature abhors a vacuum. The emptiness was trying to fill itself with her energy. For an instant, she felt as if she were going to become undone, her physical body discorporating into trillions of subatomic particles that would scatter across the entire surface of Nathema.
No!
She screamed in her mind.
The void will not take me. I am more than just a collection of random matter and particles. I am a living being. I am Mitra Surik.
The affirmation of her own existence seemed to push the void back, at least for the moment. But Mitra knew she couldn't hold out against it much longer. As much as she tried to ignore what she felt, or more precisely, didn't feel, all around her, she knew it was only a matter of time until the horrors of Nathema stripped away her sanity. She was just about to tell T3 it was time to go when he beeped triumphantly and retracted the probe.
I need to get back to the ship, she told him. You can tell me what you found when we're off this world.
Once she was in motion, she felt better, but she could still sense the void hovering on the fringes of her awareness. It was like being stalked by some nameless, faceless, invisible creature. She felt it lurking around every corner, just waiting for her to let her guard down so it could take her. She quickened her pace, trusting her droid companion to keep up, too intent on keeping a grip on herself to reply to his indignant chirps. By the time she reached the Ebon Hawk, she was running, though she wasn't even aware of it. One single thought dominated her conscious mind. Escape. She strapped herself into the pilot's chair and fired up the engines just as T3, who had fallen behind, came racing up the boarding ramp.
Hold on,
she warned as she closed the hatch and punched the engines. The Ebon Hawk took flight, hurtling itself up toward the sky and beyond. They broke atmosphere, but Mitra didn't slow the ship down. She kept the engines on full until they were on the very edge of the solar system. Only then, with several million kilometers between her and Nathema, did she feel safe enough to throttle back. T3 rolled up beside her and let out a worried whistle.
You wouldn't understand, she told him. But I'm okay now. Just give me a few minutes, and we'll take a look at what you pulled from those databanks.
It took longer than Mitra expected for T3 to decipher and translate the files from Nathema into something she could scan with the ship's computer. It was nearly 2 days before she could begin looking through the files. However, she reminded herself, considering he was processing millions of terabytes of data originally compiled on computers using fundamentally alien technology, the fact that he accomplished anything at all was a small miracle. During her initial investigations, several things quickly became clear. The building they had raided had been some type of archival storage office, a mundane but vital component of any complex government. It contained government documents, historical accounts and transcripts, and most promising of all, detailed census records collected from numerous worlds. From the census data, it became clear that Nathema had once been part of the Sith Empire. Oddly, all records seemed to predate the Great Hyperspace War. Whatever event had stripped Nathema of all life and left it devoid of the Force must have happened almost 1,000 years before. Because of that, it was impossible to tell if the Sith Empire as described in the records still existed.
but given T3's holorecording of the red-skinned being taking Revan, Mitra was willing to bet it still survived in some form. Revan had left Bastila behind because he feared the greatest threat to the Republic's survival was lurking in the unknown regions. The reemergence of the Sith Empire